Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are, this is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is true.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road, and you know, anyway.
That he calls me today, I've no regrets for this life I live.
No regrets, I've got no friends.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about, well, our Father's Day movie. Happy Father's Day. Well, releases on Father's Day in America. The rest of the world, you celebrate it on your own time. Not our business. Turns out, America's not part of the world anymore, so we'll send you a card or something. I don't know.
We're still part of the world.
Sorry.
But yeah, as it turns out, sometimes we take requests.
Yeah, this is a request. Our father, Father Anderson, philosopher.
Wise man, mechanic, fixer of many, user of duct tape, lover of outgrow.
Layer of all kinds of flooring.
And sometimes puzzling.
The man is clear in his mind, but his soul is mad. Oh, yeah. He reads poetry out loud, all right? And a voice. What are they going to say about him? What are they going to say? He was a kind man. He was a wise man. He had plans. He had wisdom.
Yes.
Yes. We love our dad. He is sometimes, he works in riddles.
Baffling, I think, is the word you're searching for.
Well, this movie may be one of those riddles. So the movie itself is called Blue Ruin from 2013. Directed by Jeremy Saulnier. I should have looked it up. Yeah. Anyway, he also directed The Green Room. I have not seen it, but I heard it's really good. Patrick Stewart.
And Macon Blair.
So, Brother Drew, tell us how this movie came onto our plate here for Father's Day feast.
Well, after our parents got back from a vacation recently, our father said, "Have you seen this movie called Blue Ruin?" And I said, "No, but I've heard of it." He said, "You guys should watch it for your podcast thing," which I thought was funny because I'm pretty sure he doesn't listen. Miles said, "Okay," and I passed that note along to you guys, and we decided as a group to do it for Father's Day in celebration of our father. And that's the entirety of how it came to be.
And none of us had seen it before. I didn't hear from Drew because you were camping this weekend. But Jason and I had similar reactions on different days when we saw the movie.
Yeah. So it's my impression that Dad watched this more than once.
Yeah, what was that about, Drew? Didn't you say he had to watch it twice or something?
Yeah, I think he got most of the way through it, maybe on a plane ride. We should get him on here to fill in the details.
We may.
And didn't get through it, and then didn't really remember what was going on, so started over and watched all the way through.
I'm wondering at what point he started over, because at one point in the movie, I wasn't sure I could continue watching it, so I don't even know how he made it through. Because not typically in his oeuvre of movie that he would sit through. Certainly not at the level of gruesomeness and grotesqueness. I'm referring specifically to Car Door. And the aftermath.
Car Door?
Yeah, he tried to rip the arrow out with the car door.
Oh, no, no. He just, worse than that, he held the arrow in place with the car door so he could saw it off.
Yes. Yeah, so let's set a little bit of stage here. Yeah, I had the comments to Jason was what? And also, is this a silent movie? Because in the first 20 minutes of the movie, there is barely any dialogue. This is a surprising movie. I was surprised at every turn by this movie. I mean, if this is the level of this director, I want to see more of his movies. Not necessarily any sequels to this.
Only perhaps if there's more story. This movie lacked story. There just wasn't enough.
It was a simple story.
It was too simple.
I think it wasn't about the story. I think it was like a character study / commentary.
Yeah, to me, this movie was all about mood. I mean, in that way, it reminded me a lot of Take Shelter. That's sort of the only way it reminds me of Take Shelter, but I had sort of the lingering feeling of like needing to ponder on this movie. It really sat with me after it was over in a similar way that Take Shelter did. Like I think it's a very haunting movie.
Yeah, I agree with that. It actually, it was one of those things where I didn't know much about it. I knew it was pretty short. So, and I was kind of tired this weekend. So I was getting ready to bed. I'm thinking, I can listen to a podcast and go to sleep, or I can start this movie. But then I started the movie, and there was no way I was not going to finish it, because and we'll give it away a little bit here. I mean, I guess I don't know, we'll probably spoil the whole thing. Although I'll tell you right up front, I think I recommend it to people, but much like Take Shelter, I describe this movie as really well done, but unpleasant.
Yeah, that's exactly how I describe it. This is an unpleasant movie, but I think one worth watching.
I think, you know, you mentioned the Take Shelter comparison. It's got points in common. You know, it's a pretty small story. It's got one main character. I think in Take Shelter, at least in my experience, you sympathized more with the main character, I think, than you do in this movie. But
yeah, I'd agree with that.
And maybe because, you know, he's just a dad and maybe we think he's crazy. This guy.
See, that was my problem with this. There wasn't enough story for you to build enough sympathy to feel one way for this guy. And so I didn't feel any way about anybody in this movie. Because there just wasn't enough. There wasn't enough background. It was so. You're just thrust in the middle of this movie. So I just watched it and I just felt disconnected from most of the characters.
Did it leave you feeling uneasy at the end of it?
No, it was like a self-cleaning oven. It's like, it's all done.
Well, that is one way to describe oven. It.
I love it.
It's like problems all taken care of. Kid walks away. So, yeah.
I do like that imagery. It's very nice. Yeah, well, okay. So, are we going to spoil the whole movie?
I think it would be impossible to discuss it without doing so.
Okay. All right. So basically, this movie opens on some sort of beach community somewhere. And Virginia Beach? Is that what it is? I think he sends the postcard, right?
I thought it was in Delaware.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. But so somewhere on the East Coast, and then he ends up going to Pittsburgh or something, right? But in the beginning, we meet this guy who we don't know his name yet, but his name is Dwight. It's played by Macon Blair. And he is a homeless person. And he doesn't spend time with anybody, so he doesn't talk. But you get to see a little slice of his life where he kind of scavenges for food and he lives in his car. And he's just, you know, he's presented as, again, not very sympathetic, I don't think. And we don't really know any of why he's homeless. You know, he's not a bad guy, but he's not somebody you just want to give a hug to, I don't think. At least from my perspective.
Well, no, he breaks into a house so he can take a bath.
True. Yeah.
Well, the movie opens with him in
That's true, in the bathtub, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it looks like he's just this beardo guy taking a bath until the people who live there come home.
Yeah, so he's living rough, and he's sleeping in his car one night, and a police cruiser comes up, and a policewoman finds him, picks him up, takes him to the police station, and gives him some bad news or disturbing news. All throughout this movie, by the way, I don't know about you guys, but I had no idea where this was going. I mean, I kind of, you know, you kind of, once we tell you what the news is, you can kind of see which direction the movie is headed. But at no point did I anticipate any twists and turns in this movie. Like, I was continually caught off guard by little plot elements.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, it's, he gets the news that the person who is convicted of murdering his parents is getting released early. So it seems like the setup for a pretty straightforward revenge story.
But this guy is not Frank Castle, the Punisher.
Yeah, this is not something that he's been like training for. He's a broken man who's been living off the grid.
Yeah, and so this sets him off to take, I guess, the only action he figures he can take, and makes his way out to the prison that the guy's being released from. Along the way, he tries to steal a gun. He steals a gun, actually. But the gun that he stole out of a truck at a bar turns out has a lock on it that he can't break. So he destroys the gun that he's trying to use to go and kill this guy. So again, he's kind of a fuck up. And that pattern repeats itself in this movie. So, which again does not make him very sympathetic.
No, he's single-minded, but not
not focused.
Yeah, he's not much of a planner.
No. And he also, you know, because he, and I think this is handled really well when he eventually does go to see his sister. He explains that, you know, he doesn't normally talk to anybody, so it's not like he's a good small talker. But anyway, so he goes and drives his crappy car, which, by the way, I love the car. I loved all the details of the car. I love the fact that the steering wheel cover was falling off.
Your bullet holes in it.
Yes. Yep. Love this car.
That's the director's parents' old car.
Oh, really? That's funny. That's, yeah. The fact that he keeps his battery in the trunk in case he ever actually needs to drive it.
Yeah, I was having problems with my external hard drive, so I wasn't able to upload the extras for you guys. Not sure if you would have watched them anyway, but I did watch them, and the story of this movie is really interesting, of how this movie got made.
Oh, okay. Well, I definitely want to hear about that. So Dwight goes to the jail that or prison that this guy Wade Cleland is being released from, and he's parked outside, and he sees this limo pull up, and these redneck guys, well, ladies and gentlemen, get out of the limo and give their cousin, brother, son, friend, whatever, a welcoming hug, and Dwight's going to follow them. So he follows them to this bar, and, you know, he doesn't have, like, you know, his gun idea didn't go well, so he's not sure what he's going to do. He's going to do something. And so he sneaks into the back of this bar and into the restroom. In the kitchen, he grabs a paring knife kind of thing.
I thought that was his own knife that he used to gut the fish earlier.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, it could be. But instead of his big, bold plan to get a gun, he has this little tiny knife. And he waits in the bathroom. And he leaps out and tries to kill the guy that killed his parents. And at first, it doesn't go so well. He stabs him in the neck, but that doesn't stop the guy from grabbing him around the throat and slamming him against the wall. But luckily, he has the wherewithal to stab the guy in the temple with a knife and kill him.
Jason, was this a point where you were wondering if you were watching the right movie?
I did have some pause, and
yeah, well,
especially because the it took you more than one attempt. You really had to kind of run up and get up to speed to do the killing, to get to the killing part.
Oh yeah.
So it was gruesome in its own right, and it was really bloody. So all of those factors combined, along with the watermelon squish sound when it went into his temple, all of those things together just seem atypical of something our dear father would sit through. So I was amazed. Either he was deaf at the time, or didn't have his earbuds in, or, and I'm not sure. Maybe they watched it on closed captioning, but it was a little off-putting.
This movie, it had all the elements. That's why I like this director's style, because when the movie was dirty, it was dirty. And then when the movie was bloody, it was bloody. And this was not cartoon violence. And this guy really gets bloody. Like, he's wearing basically white clothes, and he ends up walking out, like stumbling out of the bar, and he's got blood all over him. And as he gets in his own car to drive away,
he has a smart idea to slash the tires of the Cleland's car. Limo.
He tries to stab the tire in the limo. He does actually puncture the tire, but he also cuts his hand rather badly.
Yeah, he's a fuck up.
He is. And then he gets in his own car and realizes that he has left his keys in the bathroom, or dropped them in the bathroom.
Well, not so much left as much as snatched by somebody he just murdered.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he kept them around his neck.
So he now has an injured hand, and he has no getaway vehicle. And he knows it's a very limited time before he's going to be found out by these redneck people. And so he manages to get in the limo, and there were keys in it. So he drives away at just about the time the rednecks come out of the bar. But of course, he has already slashed one of the tires of the limo. So he has foiled his escape twice. And he gets down the road and hears like pounding from the back and realizes, oh, there's somebody still in this limo. So he pulls over and opens the door, and this like teenager gets out.
Yeah. And when he was watching him at the prison, there was one person in the car who the rest of the family is trying to drag out, but wouldn't leave the car. So this kid did not really want to participate in this homecoming.
What's the line where he asks Dwight whether Wade had hurt him or something? I don't know. He asked if he hurt Wade. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And Dwight responds with, yes, Wade hurt my parents.
And the kid's response is, I don't think so.
Yeah. He's like, I don't think he did. And then he just runs off.
Yes. Yeah. So Dwight, at that point, has to break into another house, where he actually finds some clothes that mostly fit, and he shaves, and we learn that not only is he a fuck-up as a weirdo beardo, but he's sort of this pudgy schlub guy. Dwight is never going to turn into a superhero in this movie.
I think we're offending Jason by using the term beardo.
Nah, I live in Portland.
Yeah, home of the beardos.
There's no glitter. There's no baubles. No, were it not for a red outfit that he'd found oddly in a sewer grater on the side of the road, he would be the greatest American hero, almost.
Yeah, kind of.
He does not look less weird when he's clean-shaven, though.
No, exactly. He's still a weirdo. And it's great. I mean, it's unless Macon Blair, the actor, is a weirdo, I think it's real acted.
Nah, he looked better in his homeless outfit.
So, yeah, he turned from Dollar Store Jesus into Dollar Store David Mark Chapman. But he ends up going to, I think, Pittsburgh and seeing his sister. who is on the way. She's leaving the kids with the babysitter, and she's headed to work, and she sees him, and her reaction is written on her face. It's like, oh, okay, here we go.
She was the only recognizable actor in this movie.
Oh, no. No, there's another one.
I recognize Ben.
Oh, I recognize the woman at the end.
I did not recognize her. Dwight's sister is, I don't know if you guys watched the show, but she's Carrie's sister on Homeland.
Oh, I do not watch the show. That's Amy Hargreaves.
Sounds right.
So they go to a cafe together, and he doesn't know what to... I mean, he's happy for the meal and doesn't know how to broach the conversation, but she finally makes him spit it out. And he tells her that he killed Wade. And she's, you know, shocked, but not unhappy at that. And we don't know what happened. We have no idea how this murder happened or what the backstory is. That's what this movie doesn't give you. Like Jason said, it doesn't give you any kind of backstory. You have to kind of fill in the blanks as you go.
Yeah. So, I mean, what you gather to this point is something really terrible happened to their parents. And it really damaged them in different ways. And Dwight just kind of disappeared.
Yeah.
Ended up being homeless at a place where they used to take vacations as a family, is what it sounded like. And she still took her kids there on vacation.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Because he saw her once. And that was actually a good scene, too, where she's like, "You saw me? You didn't say anything?" And his response was something like, "Well, I wasn't exactly presentable."
All true.
Yeah, absolutely. And she thinks, of course, he's just there for money. And he's like, no, we did this. But he's surprised that she hasn't read about it in the paper. And that's when we have this revelation that if they're not reading about it in the paper, that's because nobody called the police to report the murder. So he is instantly concerned about the welfare of her children. So they drive back to, which is, you know, seems like a reasonable.
Yeah, reasonable.
Concern. Yeah.
Yeah, because she's still living in their house that they grew up in, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And yep. The car that he has is registered to that address.
Yeah, exactly.
The car that he left
yeah.
at the restaurant.
Exactly, in her name. So, or maybe actually their parents' name, who knows? But, yeah. So they race back home in a tent scene, and the kids are fine, but he tells her that she needs to go away for a weekend or whatever. And now it's going to be a siege movie, kind of. He's gonna lay in wait at the house for the Cleland gang to come out and take him out. But again, he's a weirdo, so we have no idea what's gonna happen. At least, you know, I didn't have any idea what was gonna happen.
Yeah, he's not good at what he does. He has lots of ideas. But they're not great ideas.
No. And he has armed himself with a pitchfork that he found in the shed.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so he's ready to go. And he lays in wait. And sure enough, some bad guys come to the house. And
well, you got to give him credit for the subterfuge, the running of the water and leaving, you know, the lights on and tripping the light in the bedroom. I mean, he had some pretty interesting spy craft almost.
Oh, yeah. No, and he put the pillows in the bed to make it look like there was somebody in the bed. And
so he had some thinking going on, but his plan execution skills are severely lacking.
Well, it's one of those things where, you know, you have an idea, but if you've never done this before, you have no idea what bad things can happen. Like, if you've never slashed a tire on a car before, you have no idea how badly you can hurt yourself in the attempt.
Yep.
So it turns out one guy's got a gun and another guy's got a crossbow. And he makes fairly quick work of, he hits the one guy with the car, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Runs him down.
Yes. Knocks him unconscious. But then he gets shot in the leg with a crossbow bolt. And it would be funny if it weren't so gruesome and continued to be gruesome, because he walks around, he has to like load the guy in the car, all the while he's got this crossbow bolt like sticking out of his leg, and he's got to go and as we described before, he has to figure out what to do. And the first thing he figures out is he's got to at least cut it off, so it's not so, you know, you can't walk around with a foot worth of arrow hanging out of you. So
yeah, otherwise he'd be Steve Martin.
So he grabs he finds a hacksaw and some pliers, and his first thought is, okay, he's gonna hacksaw it off. And so he braces, because he's got a saw with one hand, so he braces the arrow with the car door. And it was just, this is where I thought I had the wrong movie, because I cannot imagine our father watching this movie.
Exactly. I think that's the same point where I texted you, like, are we sure?
Exactly.
Are we really sure? Because I don't see it.
And then, again, this movie is realistic is probably the wrong word to use, but. You know, so he cuts the arrow. He's able to you know, to shear off the most of it. Then he tries to take a pair of pliers and take it out of his leg, but that's not happening. So he ends up like limping himself into a hospital, where he basically says, "I got shot with an arrow or something." Right? I don't know exactly what he says, but and then passes out.
I think
out.
He says his leg was hurt.
Oh yeah, there you go. And so he wakes up.
You don't think he got the arrow out?
I don't think he got the arrow out, huh?
I thought he got it out and then went to the hospital.
I got the impression. I don't know. What did you think, Jason?
No, I don't think he got it out. If he got it out, I think he wouldn't have gone to the hospital.
Yeah, I think he didn't get it out, too. I think he couldn't have pulled it out. Nature of arrowheads and stuff. But either way, he wakes up and his leg is all patched up, and he escapes from the hospital. Back to his car that he had stashed, with the bad guy still in the back seat of.
Who's not dead?
No, no.
He's in the trunk, not the back seat.
I'm sorry, the trunk. Yeah.
He's awfully quiet though.
And so Dwight knocks on the hood of the trunk, and there's the guy's like, "Hey, get me out!" And so pretty much the entire time there, he's panging on the car and whatever. But
Dwight does what most teenagers do in their vehicles when something's making noise in the vehicle they don't want to hear. Let's turn the radio up.
Absolutely.
The Eric method.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, the click and clack method. I've also got
the anti-dad method.
I've also got that the black electrical tape you can put right over the check engine light if it annoys you with its shining. Yeah, no, but what Dwight does do is he's got to figure out, solve this problem. So he goes to his sister's house again, gets out his school yearbook, and looks up any of his old friends. And I don't know if his friend Ben, played by Devon Rattray, I don't know. I don't know if
Cujo.
He was he like, yeah, exactly. Was he like in ROTC or something, or did, was there
yes.
some, okay. Yeah. So
that was the picture caption.
Yeah. So he knows he's experienced in some sort of military stuff. So, Ben goes to his old house and talks to his mom. Dwight goes to Ben's old house, knocks on the door and talks to his mom, who brings him in for tea, which is very nice because he likes tea. Even when he was homeless, he was a tea drinker. And then he searches for Ben.
And he still has a dude in his trunk.
Yeah, the whole time. Yeah. Yep.
While he's having tea.
Yep. So he goes out to the bar where Ben works. His mom, I guess, he thinks that Ben is in a band, but really he's like the sound guy / roadie. And Ben is great.
Yeah, where do you know Ben from, Jason?
He was on. He's been in a lot of episodic television. He was in Law and Order, and he was also in The Good Wife.
Oh,
so I've seen him in a number of roles.
He was good.
Yeah, he was good.
Yeah, he's good in everything he's been in. So he was certainly. I think he was the best actor of this entire movie.
I don't know. I think Dwight was a really good actor.
I give him a close second.
Ben auditioned for the role of the dude in the trunk. but they liked this other guy for that, but they liked the actor so much they found another role for him in Ben.
He looked more rednecky.
Oh yeah. He also had the friendlier face.
Yeah. He also was of the right age to have been able to have been Dwight's pal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, might not have worked out.
Yeah, and maybe you clean up the other guy and he would look just as good, but maybe not.
Maybe. But Ben seems to be the good, long-lost pal from high school where he kind of figures what's going on. He doesn't ask a lot of questions. He asks enough questions to be helpful, but not enough to get him involved in some kind of accessory.
Yeah, and in a nice twist, not only does he not offer his services as backup, but Dwight takes him out as backup. He thinks, at least.
Yeah, I mean, when Dwight's first talking to Ben and, asking for a gun and stuff, Ben doesn't think he's serious, and he's just, like, fucking around with him.
Yeah. And Dwight doesn't tell him what's going on, just tells him that he does need a gun and doesn't want to be asked any questions.
Yeah.
So, sure enough, they go out and do some target practice. All the while, this guy's still in the trunk. But
I thought target practice was later.
Oh, maybe because he gave him a different gun. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. It turns out that gun wasn't the best gun for him anyway. Yeah, so he loaned him a rifle and tells him that he's got 15 acres of land or whatever so he can go out. Yeah, if he needs the space away from people, he's got a place to do it. So he takes the car out there, unlocks the trunk. Has a jug of water, which is nice. Nice touch. And the rifle. And he sees Teddy. So Teddy is one of Wade's brothers. And from this scene, we learn a lot, actually.
We learn a bit. I wouldn't say a lot. A lot's being generous.
Well, in the context of how much information you get throughout the whole movie, this is a lot right here.
It's master exposition.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah. Because we learn that, a couple of things. We learn that the circumstances of the death of the parents, they were shot to death. And, ostensibly by Wade, but Teddy points out that Wade didn't do it. He would have gone to jail if he could do the time, but he already had two strikes. So Wade took the rap for it because the person who really did it was their father, Big Wade.
But he was too old to do any time.
Yeah. And he had cancer. And Teddy was pretty proud that even though he had cancer and died a horrible death, he died as a free man.
And we find out that the only thing that's really still driving Dwight is his concern that the Clelands are going to take revenge, not on him, but on his sister.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because he hadn't thought that out, that through. That all, if this is just revenge on revenge on revenge.
The Hatfield and McCoys.
Yeah. An eye for an eye leaves the whole world blind.
We also learned that Dwight's father had an affair with the Cleland mother.
Yes, which is the whole genesis of the problem.
So this lacks the subtlety in exposition that him buying the Delaware roadmap in the beginning of the movie opposes.
What do you mean? Explain.
So at the beginning of the movie, he buys the Delaware map to show where he's going, which is a masterful exposition because it's very subtle, but it gives you the information you need to know without just like diarrhea all over the place. As opposed to this, which is just one big giant torrent.
This to me was like a Tarantino scene.
Yeah, I think it didn't bother me because I was really hungry for information at this point.
Yeah, me too.
So it was placed well.
I was going to say, but I was so frustrated with the movie by this part that I was done.
See, I liked the movie up to this part. I really appreciated how much they did a lot of showing instead of telling. I appreciated the quiet nature of the movie. And I was digging the characters. You know, Dwight was a weirdo, but he was interesting. He wasn't really good at what he's trying to do, but he was still compelling. And then he runs into people like Ben, who's super interesting and charismatic. And then we get to Teddy, who's just a maniac.
Well, Ben actually turns out to be something of a prophet, too. Well, prophet's probably a strong word, but he gives the best advice in this movie. And twice, Dwight, I mean, I think he gives it to it after the first time it happened, but he mentions that, you know, if he's got to go do something, go in there and do it. No speeches. Speeches will get you killed.
Yep.
And so a speech almost nearly got him killed with Teddy in a very Tarantino dramatic scene that, again, after this part of the movie, I thought, Dad watched this movie?
Yeah, he watched exactly.
He watched this scene twice.
Yeah. Well, maybe not this scene.
Oh,
depends on how far he got. But that was my reaction as well. I'm like, how? How? There's no way. Kaboom.
Yeah.
I think there's a piece of brain over there. Yeah. Don't worry about it. The coyotes will get that.
Well, yeah, that's the thing is Ben, you know, Ben is Frank Castle, it turns out. Or he actually reads a lot of Punisher comic books because he's got quite an arsenal at home, including like a 50 caliber sniper rifle probably.
Well, he was a sniper over in the Middle East, right?
Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah, maybe I missed that exposition, but yeah. No, he's
That's what the mom tells Dwight.
Oh, okay.
Which is what sells Dwight on really going to find him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's when Ben says, "Okay, now I know there's a little bit more going on, but you need if this is going to go any further, you need to be better trained." And so they give him a more easily managed gun and some practice.
He also said something really interesting.
"I'm sorry I brought all this to you."
"I'm glad you did. Otherwise, you'd be dead.
You know what I mean.
If it were my family, I might do the same. I don't know. But I'm not helping out because this is right. This is ugly, man."
And it was this weird sort of morality he had about it.
No, it's I'll help you as a friend, but I'm not going to participate beyond helping you.
Yeah, yeah.
Again. I'm not going to be involved with the actual act, i.e. I'm going to distance myself enough so that I won't be an accessory.
Well, there's that.
Yeah.
Which is why he mentions, I couldn't do anything until he drew his weapon on you.
Exactly, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, he was waiting.
But let's get rid of the body.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want him off my land.
Yeah, but his conscience is clear. That's the most important thing. Yeah, maybe we could get a sequel. It could be the Ben movie.
I would watch that movie.
I would watch that movie, too.
So, maybe we should write the director.
No, so instead of what, Kwai Chan Kane, it could be like Ben going around the United States, sort of Kung Fu and the Incredible Hulk style.
I don't get the reference, I'm sorry.
Remember the Kung Fu movie where David Carradine played the Shaolin monk who wandered around the Old West?
It was a movie or a TV show?
I'm sorry, TV show. Yeah, nope. I'm sure there was a TV movie. You never saw Kung Fu?
Nope.
Oh, it was great. When you can snatch the pebble from my hand, Grasshopper.
Yeah, I've never seen it, but I've heard all the references.
You've never seen Kung Fu?
No. But you told me all about it when I asked you why you named your monk character in The Bard's Tale Grasshopper.
Ah, oh, there you go.
Jeez. Wow, that is like a lasagna dysfunction right there. Layer on layer.
Oh, it's great. No, it's great. That's like an old reference.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you have an Ultima 4 character that was named funny too?
Oh, I don't know. But No, it's, I mean, I think Kung Fu was probably my Wild Wild West.
Probably. It probably was on TV more during your ability to see it, when it was more in your formative years. And by the time I was watching TV, I don't think it was on, so.
Yeah. It never hit the heavy rotation, I don't think, in like syndication. At least in Anchorage, Alaska. Yeah, good stuff. I mean, not great stuff. But, yeah. Anyway, we'll talk about Kung Fu, the TV show, at some future date. If I can find the TV movie or something, there's got to be a movie.
I'd rather spend a whole episode talking about The Bard's Tale.
Okay.
I'd seconded.
Or we can
this motion is carried.
No, we can do Lone Wolf McQuade.
Nope, keep going.
The Chuck Norris David Carradine movie, where in their contract they couldn't
zip it.
Neither, you're done. None of
cut
them.
Off. Zip. Dumb.
Okay. Oh, we've already determined our path forward.
Okay. Well, we're, you know, set. Yeah, but when you don't leave footprints in the rice paper, grasshopper, then you'll be ready. Anyway, so I want to see the further adventures, maybe like a television series, the further adventures of Ben.
You're describing a bum. That's what you're describing.
So I don't even get that reference.
That's from Pulp Fiction.
Oh, okay.
When Samuel L. Jackson is telling John Travolta he wants to walk the earth, yes. like Kane. Kung Fu.
Yeah. yeah, it's true. Now this movie is geared toward basically the final battle, where he's gotta draw the rest of the Clelands, since he killed Teddy, or had Teddy was killed, and the other guy is out there somewhere, the guy with the crossbow. He's got to find a way to make this all stop. Dwight's goal, now that things are in motion, is to get it to stop. He wants to protect his sister and her kids and end the fighting between the families.
Yeah, because Ben killed Teddy, right, as Teddy was saying that's why we were going to kill your, like, head to Pittsburgh or something, where the sister was staying.
Yeah, and end your family.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't mess with the Clelands. So Dwight makes his final road trip. On his way for his final mission, this is where I told you Dwight disabled Ben's car.
And he stole the battery.
Yeah, so Ben couldn't follow. And Ben sort of notices this and sort of smiles, because he's just basically, Dwight has done him a solid by not drawing him into more bloodshed. And then Dwight ends up going to the Clelands' house.
Well, Dwight kind of has a last supper.
Yep.
Goes to a diner.
Yeah.
His body cannot handle it. Yeah.
The big old glass of red wine with the...
it's kind of incongruous to see like a diner setting in a big glass of
Denny's red wine. With a giant goblet of wine.
Yes.
It should have come with a little umbrella on the side of it.
But, he goes out to the Clelands' house. And, or, I don't know what part of the Cleland family it is. It's somebody's house. I guess it must be the Cleland homestead, because Cleland's father, Wade Sr.'s grave is there.
Yeah, well, when he was talking with his sister, she was complaining that, you know, the family still lives up there on that house on whatever road.
Oh, okay.
And she sees them all the time, and it distresses her.
Yeah, because they run that limo service, and yeah, so Dwight ends up going to the house and takes all the guns and throws them in the pond. And pees on the father's grave. Plants Teddy in the ground.
Gets freaked out by a time-o-matic light.
Yes. Very, very, very nice, though. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, he gets rid of all the guns. He barricades himself, like, in the living room in view of the entrance of the house. He's got, like, a really nice ambush setup going. He puts a little jar of coins against the door. But, well, this is another thing I really appreciated about this movie, is it really highlighted like how much it must suck to be on a stakeout.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You're laying in wait. That's a rough time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he calls and leaves a message on the answering machine, and is just waiting. And then the Cleland family returns And it's a man, presumably crossbow guy, and two scary-ass hillbilly women who are the sisters slash daughter of Wade.
Yeah, and Dwight just watches them as they listen to the message he left about how he killed Teddy and just wants it all to end. And he waits until the, I think it's the younger sister, starts screeching about how they're going to go up to Pittsburgh. Or maybe it was the dude said, that's why we're going to Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah. No, they're all talking about how they've got, you know, they've killed Teddy and they're going to end their family. And so Dwight ends up shooting the guy. And then we have the two ladies. And this is where Dwight's going to, you know, not take Ben's advice, and he's going to give a speech. So he starts talking about how this could end. But, you know, it's going to end one way or another. And that's when Junior comes along with a shotgun and sort of outflanks Dwight in his sniper's nest and shoots him. Then Dwight, like, disarms him, but tells him, you know, you've pretty much done your job. You can go now. It's like indicating that he's, like, mortally wounded.
And lifts up his shirt just to give us some more gore.
That's for Dad. Happy Father's Day. Also, this is where Dwight lays a little knowledge on us that we probably could have guessed, that the teenage boy was actually his half-brother. So,
yeah, I did not understand how those dots got connected. I don't know if that was just, like, known amongst the families.
Yeah, exactly. But so then we turn our focus, because the kid runs off, and we turn our focus back on the hillbilly ladies, younger and older. And the older one, the blonde, looked a little familiar. Not super familiar, but a little familiar. Later, I figured out why. It's Eve Plum, Jan Brady. Marcia. I think the best actress and the best looking of the Brady sisters.
The middle kid?
Yes.
I thought she was the younger.
Nope. What is the younger one's name?
No.
It's Maureen.
I got nothing.
Brady Bunch was another one of those things where we didn't watch it in our house growing up. I've seen a lot of the Brady Bunch on, like, TV Land reruns, only as an adult, never as a kid, though. Because it must have been opposite something we watched on, like, the Happy Days or something.
Susan Olsen was Cindy Brady.
Ah, okay, yeah. Yeah, so we have the Last Stand, and a very aviator apocalypse now ending, where after Jan Brady goes for a machine gun, he's laying there whispering, the keys are in the car. The keys are in the car. The way of the future. The way of the future. The horror. Yeah, so everybody dies. I mean, I have to give it to them. I mean, it's
well, the kid doesn't die.
Well, it's the kind of story I generally like, when everybody dies at the end. Maybe when I was a younger man, that was my favorite ending of any movie, but less so now, probably, but still.
I don't do it nowadays, because then there's no sequel.
Well,
can't kill everybody.
Yeah, this is, well, no, because we have the boy and Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the title, Ben and the Boy. Then the sequel. Blue Ruin 2, Electric Boogaloo.
No, yeah, they're not related. They could be a romance. Who knows?
Bromance.
There you go. But yeah, so this movie ruined my going to sleep. Because
you couldn't sleep?
I was tired. I was ready to go to sleep, and I watched this movie. I'm like, I just felt a little gut punched that it was really dark for a Father's Day movie. Okay, Father Anderson introduced us to the great works of art, such as Porky's and DC Cab.
Well, okay, but also Raiders of the Lost Ark.
True, true.
But also The Dark Crystal.
Yeah, true.
Empire Strikes Back.
And this is also the man who would not even be in the same room with me if I was trying to show him the tooth that I just lost.
No,
exactly.
I tell the story famously to all my friends. Like, if we ever needed money as kids, we didn't use no tooth fairy. We just ripped one of our teeth out and chased Dad. And he would throw $20 bills at us. Like, get away.
Yeah. No, I told you, like many years ago, my autobiography was going to be called, My Daddy Was Never the Tooth Fairy. Of course, then again, there's the paradox of a man who is totally squeamish about like teeth or blood or whatever, and yet will do home surgery on his toe every night for 20 years.
Also, will snake the drain in the house to the main, which is its own level of grossness.
not anymore.
Yeah, see, there you go.
He doesn't do that anymore.
Yep, good for him. So, happy Father's Day to Father Anderson.
So when I got back into town and I saw the text string between you guys, which is pretty funny, I went ahead and texted Dad and told him that we were talking about Blue Ruin based on his recommendation. And just to make sure we had the right movie, I asked him to describe what it was about without giving anything away. And he sent me back the most awesome response I could have hoped for. A little background, the text that preceded that request was a picture of my new grill.
Just so you know, it doesn't have like Drew written in diamonds in the gold on the front teeth. But
Yeah, sorry, a barbecue grill. I'll be more specific next time. But yeah, this was his response verbatim. This is our father's description of the movie Blue Ruin. Bloody murder by weird son. Barbecue looks awesome. Work good? 2 question marks.
Oh, okay. See, that here's what I didn't understand, because I didn't realize you got a new barbecue. I thought he was referring to a plate of food, and he was asking you how your job was going.
Oh, nope. So, bloody murder by weird son.
Yep.
There's some interesting psychology there. That's how he identified Dwight.
We should get Dad to sum up all the movies. If we could have Father Anderson write the review, it'll be the Anderson Father Anderson's review haiku.
Yeah, no, like, 5-word plot summaries by Dick Anderson.
Yes.
I love it.
Well, so I will reveal the last text. I will reveal the last text message I received from Dad. Because every time I receive a text message, it always brings me angst, anxiety, and apprehension. Because I'm not sure whether to read it right away or wait to read it. But,
always wait.
I was at work, I think. I was at work, actually. And so he sends a text message, and this is the text message. Got any room to bring cheesy crack? Which is a thing, because I have them addicted to these cheese munchies that I can only buy in Portland. So I end up bringing them with me wherever I go, where we're going to rendezvous. So he's got a supply. And I said, in my response, you have 2 boxes arriving today with 10 bags. Happy early Father's Day. Also, you're molding. So, because I've had that giant piece of Ford Starliner molding sitting in my house. So he sends me a text message spelled out in teen text. You are a good kid, THX. And I said, I had a good example. And he says, yep, your brothers and mom are iconic. Thanks, and thanks for the cheesy crack. It is here.
Aw.
That's like the text equivalent of a hair tussle.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
So, mazel tov.
Yeah. L'chaim.
Gesundheit.
Nü.
Booster off.
How do you say the Russian version of like to your health?
Nastrovia?
No, it's like it's got two different. It's like it starts with, it's Z and then something and then another big Z word.
No, but that's hilarious because that's what they always say on The Americans, Jason.
What?
Nestorovia.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, isn't it?
I don't know what it means, but they
from
always
Fiddler
say that.
On the Roof, I think there's a song called that. That's okay. A question for you. Okay, well, hold on. Before you get there, Brother Jay, your verdict?
So, okay. I thought the movie was well shot. It was well constructed. It was certainly, it kept going. The movie flowed. I just couldn't forgive the story the way it was. So I would give the movie a C for me.
Brother Drew, was it worth it?
It is worth it. It's a really interesting movie. If you're listening to this, it's probably already too late, but I think it's a fantastic movie to go into without any knowledge about what you're going to see, because it keeps changing your expectations. You know, it sets itself up as a revenge movie, but then the revenge killing happens right away. And then you think you're in for like a siege thriller, but then the siege ends right away. And then it goes on to like maybe a redemption story, but no, that goes pretty quickly too. And everybody dies. So I thought it was well paced. It was well acted. It was obviously a really low budget, but it looked great. The effects were well done. The gruesome effects were good. It is a movie that keeps your interest, even though it's really quiet and still a lot. I thought it was a really compelling movie. I don't think it's a movie I'll ever want to watch again, because it's really uncomfortable and unpleasant, and it's the main character is not someone you really want to spend a lot of time with, even if you understand and maybe even agree with what he's doing.
No, he's not likable. His own sister. I mean, that's the quote that his sister, I'd forgive you if you were crazy, but you're just weak.
Yeah, that is rough sibling.
that was brutal.
Yeah.
But I really like this movie. And we can talk about how this movie came to be once we're all said and done, if you want. But that's an interesting story too.
Yeah, I think Nestorovia, I'm pronouncing it wrong.
Nestorovia.
It's like a mispronounced American or English translation from what the real words are, and so it's all the same thing.
Okay,
it's Zava Sastorovia, something like that. But of course, you know, it's like written phonetically anyway, so because it's in Cyrillic, so I have no idea what it's, you know. I just saw it once as a as an end to a email. Somebody put that instead of cheers. Or now I'm seeing, maybe it's the military guys I work with, but now I'm seeing all the emails done with V/R, which I think is supposed to be like very respectfully. It's the first time I saw it. The third time I saw it, I'm like, "What the hell does that mean?" Because the first time
is a very common and correct closing salutation within the U.S. military.
Very respectfully, yeah. Okay, so anyway, Drew, tell us about how this movie was made.
So the director and the main actor are childhood friends, and they always were into movies, and they used to make their own movies when they were like in the seventh grade. And they started like practicing special effects. Like they had footage of Macon Blair with like a little M80 taped to his chest when he was a kid with like ketchup packets. So it would explode and it would look like it was all bloody. So they made little home movies. And they, as they got older, they decided they wanted to do this together. And they made a movie a few years ago called Murder Party. And they thought it was going to be their big break. They're really proud of it. I think it got accepted into a couple film festivals, And it turned out it was not their big break. So the director went back to shooting. He was a cinematographer on other friends' projects. So he did that, and he really spent a lot of time learning more of the craft. And while he was doing that, he had an idea for this movie, Blue Ruin, and he wrote it. And he wanted his friend to star, because he sort of wrote the character Dwight with Macon Blair in mind. So he started shopping around the script, and then quickly found out that nobody would finance a movie that was, with a lead actor that nobody had heard of and a director that nobody knew about. So they pretty much self-financed. He leveraged all of his savings and retirement and assets, and he had a wife and maybe a really young kid at the time.
Wait, does he not have them anymore?
No, I think the kid's not as young.
Okay. Well, he had a wife and a kid, but he sold them into slavery.
But he was getting a lot of good feedback about the script, but he was unwilling to compromise. He wanted to direct it, and he wanted Macon Blair to star as Dwight. So he had one camera. I think it was barely a commercial grade camera. And they had an idea for where they wanted to shoot the movie. The house, his sister's house, is actually his parents' old house. All the locations were places that were owned by people he knew, so they got permission to shoot there. The car was his family's old beater car, the Bonneville.
Which was nicknamed Blue Ruin.
Oh, yeah. That's funny.
Which I'd never heard of it as a term before, but I guess it means, tragedy?
Oh, I'd never heard of it before either. I have no idea.
That's what IMDb mentions in trivia, that both the car was called Blue Ruin because it was a blue wreck, and that it's also a term for
tragedy.
Yes.
Yeah, it's
but late. But they having trouble getting financing. So what they did is they went on a location shoot. And they shot what was essentially a music video, but they're just trying to show what the mood of the movie would be. So they had some shots of the beach shots. They had Macon Blair in his full Dwight get up, homeless Dwight get up, walking through the woods with a rifle, and it was really moody. And they used that video to sort of put it out there, this is the mood of the movie. This is what it's going to look and feel like. And they got some financing based off that, and then finished off their financing with a Kickstarter campaign.
This is a Kickstarter movie?
A little bit of the budget was Kickstarter, and they finally pulled it all together, and they started, they sort of had to fake it till they made it. The script made it to, what's her name, Amy Hargraves. And she sent in an audition tape for it, and they were blown away that a real actress was willing to try out for their movie. And as soon as they, contacted her to say, we want you to star in our movie, they realized that she's probably going to start to look at who else is involved. So they dummied up, Macon Blair's IMDb page so that if she Googled him, he wouldn't appear like a total nobody. And they actually had an interview with her. She's well, it worked. That's exactly what I did. And I saw a bunch of pictures and I thought, oh, well, he has been in stuff.
They lied to IMDb?
Weird, huh?
Wikipedia.
Yeah. So, yeah, they scratched and clawed their way to get this movie made. And they were really proud of it. And they shopped it to Sundance. And they were denied. Sundance was pass. But then they got accepted into Cannes and did well there. And then Sundance brought him back and was like, oh, you know what? We made a mistake. And so this movie did turn out to be their big break.
Except this movie really didn't make any money.
No, but it got a lot of critical recognition and it got them on the map. And it helped them get financing for the Green Room.
Yeah, again, I want to watch The Green Room just based on watching this movie and the fact that I've heard nothing but good stuff about it.
Yeah. Anton Yelchin.
Yeah, Patrick Stewart, Anton Yelchin.
And Macon Blair.
Yeah. This is a high recommend for me, but much like Take Shelter, it's like you got to be in the right mood for it. I don't know how you watched it twice, Dad. Maybe do a double feature with Take Shelter and Blue Ruin, although it'd be hard to say which one goes first. Maybe Blue Ruin goes first.
Yeah, this is the most baffling thing about this movie. This does not seem like a dad movie.
Not at all.
No, it really doesn't.
Yeah, so good for Dad.
I'm glad he recommended it, because I don't think I would have watched it otherwise.
It's adding a new facet to an already brilliant carved stone. That is our father. So, happy Father's Day.
Did either of you watch the Blue Ruin stuff?
Yes, I did.
I did not have a chance, so tell me all about it.
Oh my God, they made him cry. Those bastards.
They made the character cry?
They made the creator.
Oh.
At the end of the interview. What would Ed Sr. think of... Like, they just went right for it, and he just was not prepared. I mean, I give him credit for asking the question, but holy God, that poor guy.
Well, who's Ed Sr. is?
The dad of the writer.
So, was the dad a writer also?
He passed away.
Oh, okay.
He passed away before the film was finished. But the story is that he told his dad that the film was finished and was great. That's the TLDR is, you know, he told his dad so his dad would die happy, and a couple months later it turned out to be the truth.
Sweet.
That's a fun story about how that movie was made, though, right?
It was. It was interesting. It was interesting and very strange. It's very strange to watch Macon. he's kind of a strange guy. So. Yep. But they're all liars.
Uh-huh.
And, but hey, whatever it takes to get it made, right?
Did you watch the camera test too?
I did.
Wasn't that great?
It was. It was a very different. The camera test was very different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was a different character, so they changed him a fair bit. I think for the better.
Yeah. Sorry, I hadn't gotten those up before we actually talked about the movie.
No, it's fine. I think. Having him be less homeless and more proper during the middle and end of the movie were better than having him be crazy homeless guy through the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I guess I didn't see that contrast, but yeah, it was good when he got a little cleaned up.
Yeah, well, because it gave you a perspective of how far he had come and fallen and then regained. It's kind of that fallen from grace redemption story. Unfortunately, it just spiraled out of control.
I was going to say, he never really got redeemed at all. That's how well, that's no, why the movie was so sad.
Yeah.
Hey, no, we can throw this on the end of the actual Blue Ruin episode.
Oh, yeah, we can. Macon Blair directed his own movie called I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore. It's supposed to be really good. It's on Netflix.
Any kind of fun stories, housekeeping, anything?
I have a couple housekeeping things, real quick. I just wanted to mention, in addition to Blue Ruin, I've actually seen two other movies this week. One on purpose, one by accident. I watched, with my wife, I watched The Founder. Have either of you seen that?
Is it the Ray Kroc story?
Mm-hmm.
Nope, I've heard about it. Greg Kinnear, is that who plays him?
Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton. Sorry, they're the same person.
Yeah.
Man.
It's really good. And yeah, I won't say anything more than that, but I thought it was ambiguous all the way up until it wasn't.
About whether he was a good guy or not, you mean?
Yeah. Well, not necessarily a good guy, but was he a bad guy or not?
Oh, okay.
But it was really good. It was a compelling movie. When we watched it in one sitting, which is rare. And then last night I had like an Eric Blue Ruin experience where I was flipping channels, and Good Will Hunting had just started. And I forgot. I love Good Will Hunting. Yeah. That's a great movie. I would love to talk about it on the podcast one day.
I have never seen it.
I really like it. It's definitely dated now, but it's still a fun watch. And it's got one of the best commentary tracks I can ever remember watching.
Yeah, I was gonna say I saw it in Missouri, and I saw it and then watched it with the commentary track too. At the same visit that I saw Taxi Driver and that commentary track.
Yeah. It actually I feel like a bad
on.
Host.
No. It turned me on to the idea of commentary tracks.
Yeah, it's a great movie. And my wife mentioned that it had been on TV earlier in the evening. And when my children turned on TV, and they were going to turn it to cartoons. But it was one of the math scenes, and my oldest one was watching it for a few minutes. Didn't want to turn the channel, which was weird.
Yeah, cool.
Well, my youngest one was complaining to her that it's a grown-up show and she wanted to watch cartoons. But I just meant to watch. Oh, like I'll just watch this first scene. It's funny, and then like this other scene's coming up. I want to watch that. And it's like I'll just watch it. And next thing I know, it's like 1 o'clock. Fuck.
Exactly.
And it hit me in the feels in a way that it did not when I was younger.
Because of Robin Williams, you think?
No, I think just because I'm older and I'm more emotional now.
Ah.
Like I had similar feelings. It just affected me a lot more.
I find that to be true of a great many things these days as I age. Things that I would have thought silly as a 25-year-old now. Like, I will catch myself actively, like, catching my breath and tearing up, and then be like, what the fuck is going on in my head?
I have a whole excised story about asking you guys whether you cry very often, and then I excised it because I realized later that it's because my meds were all fucked up. So, no, it's on your list. It's on my list of movies that Drew wants to talk about at some point, so it needs to go on the calendar. Maybe I just misspelled Good Will Hunting when I typed Aviator.
Maybe.
Some kind of bizarre world autocorrect.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so the story isn't very long. You mind if I tell you the story?
No, I have a good long story. So.
Okay, but you said it wasn't for the podcast, or this is for the podcast?
No, it's not for the podcast.
Okay, well, so I'll tell you a quick story for the podcast that you'll appreciate, hopefully. It's an Alaskan story. I don't really get to tell very many Alaskan stories because I don't feel I'm a very Alaskan kind of guy, even though I've lived here my whole life. Like, I don't hunt, I don't fish, I don't ski, I don't really, you know, I don't know. I exercise in the outdoors only when I have to make plane weight. by the way, I've been walking as many times as I can a week. This week will be the first week I don't get 5 out of 7 days because I had to take two days off in a row because for the first time, like in 2 weeks, when I went out walking, instead of just shuffling along, it actually felt like I was like I was all... Like, I actually thought to myself, I feel like my feet are two panthers pouncing as I'm walking down the street. And I tend to walk on the, I don't know, it's very dramatic. And I had music going on. It was great. And so instead of walking my normal
length, was it the Rocky theme?
No, it wasn't, but it was close. Okay. So,
I had the tiger.
No. But anyway, I sent you my playlist. It's a bunch of up-tempo stuff. In fact, you could add to it at some point. But this is not even part of my story. I just mentioned that I had to take two days off in a row because I had a blister after I added a mile. So I was like, instead of 3.1, which is my normal path, I went like 4.5 miles or something. And the next day, I had a blister the size of a fingerling potato on the bottom of one foot. So that was pretty upsetting. Now I see the value of duct taping your feet before you go walking. Anyway, so this is the Alaskan story. So I'm at work, and I try not to talk about work as much as possible, but I get a call from a lady who is freaking out because she's got a bear in her house. She lives on the part of the Anchorage hillside that is referred to as Bear Valley. So, you know, it's a spoiler. But she was freaking out because she was outside watering her plants because it was like for Anchorage today, it was a great day. It was like 75 degrees and super sunny and not even much wind. And she was out there doing her gardening and had left the door open, and she went inside to get something or whatever. But then she hears something and looks down, and there is a mother bear and two cubs in the ground level of her house inside. She runs upstairs to the second story and looks out the window and sees two more cubs outside. One's on her garage roof and one is on her deck. She is understandably freaking out.
So she flips her chicken.
She calls 911 and she's like, there's a bear in my house. And I'm like, okay, what's your address? And she's like, they're screaming. Can you hear them? And she's trying to actually put her phone, I think, up to like a, I'm envisioning in my head, like a banister or something where she like, no, I don't worry about me hearing what's going on. I'm going to rely on you to tell me what's going on. But I could hear the bears. They were making bear sounds. And, she had a dog and two cats in the house. She couldn't see the two cats, but she figured they were hiding. Cause one of them especially liked to hide behind her hearth, like part of her fireplace area. It's got a little cubby hole back there. And I'm thinking to myself,
cubby hole.
No, I was thinking to myself, well, I want to say this, but in case things go poorly at the end, I don't want to be on tape saying this, but, and I was going to say, well, you're not going to see that cat for a couple days, I bet. So, you know, the bears are running around inside her house downstairs and she were trying to get police to come out and help her out. And I just keep trying to calm her down. And I told her to go into a room where she could close the door, and she hid in the bathroom upstairs, which gave her a certain level of safety, but also gave her no windows. So that was, you know, you give one thing up, you know. And it was just she and her little dog in the bathroom, and I could hear the bears, and she could hear the bears, and she's freaking out. I'm asking her to describe what her house looks like, and she's like, it's a black bear in my house. There's bears. I'm like, I know what the black bears look like. You need to tell me what your house looks like. Are the numbers on your house easy to read? No. Then you need to tell me what your house looks like. So, of course, it seems like for her, it takes forever for us to get there, but we were there pretty quickly. And luckily, this is, you know, again, it's a short story, but luckily, and this is not characteristic necessarily of Alaska, the officers get there. And instead of what I was fearing was, you know, I tell her to basically repeat everything she hears. If the bears go up the stairs, I want to know about it. If they go down the stairs, I want to know about it. If you hear glass breaking, I want to know about it. If you hear, you know, officers arrive, sirens, I want to know about it. So she's describing everything she's hearing. And I was afraid the next thing she was going to hear is a series of shotgun blasts when we have to kill the mom and then eventually all of the cubs. But no, nope. Through a series of yelling and sirens and bullhorn stuff, we got the bears to go outside and run back in the woods. Everybody lives to fight another day, which is what I always want at the end of a call.
How much bear poop was in her house?
I can imagine there was quite a mess in her house. They probably weren't in there for very long, but bears can make a mess. And I imagine her kitchen was full of food, so it probably has a little bit less food. And I thought it was cool for mom to post up the two of the cubs as lookouts. And she took the other two cubs inside to do her B&E. But I'm sure the lady made a BM in her pants. She was pretty upset. I even asked her, so have you seen these bears already this year? She goes, no, in fact, you know, well, I normally see bears about June, but I've never had one in the house before. I was like, yeah, well. It's very exciting.
Maybe close your damn doors.
Well, now she knows. She lives in the future. So that's an Alaska story. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages, or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts, dial it already.